I guess I'm the selected short subject, and I'll come later. Jennifer's given a bit of the background, and I don't want to take too much more of your time tonight, but this is kind of fun, and I will try to keep it lighthearted. It's easy to be lighthearted after a mission has been as successful as this one, although I must say that during the mission we had many episodes of high drama, as you'll see, which did not lead to lightness of heart, shall we say. First thing I'm going to attempt to do, though, I wanted to show you the launch. And the best version that I have, at least on my laptop, is a home movie taken by our own Jennifer Wiseman. And there's actually some sound with this, but you won't be able to hear it because it's not hooked up to a speaker. But you can hear Jennifer chirping away in the background, which is lovely.
Which neat. Here we have a sound.
Yeah. Okay.
We'll see.
Maybe that'll work. Okay. So let me start with that footage. I think it takes it a second to boot up here. Yeah. So it went into some thin clouds, and we weren't able to see the solid rocket boosters separate, but you could just sort of infer when that would happen. Yeah. Let's see. I'm praying. There's Jennifer. So we know she was there. Okay, and if you've never seen a shuttle launch while they're still happening, you know, avail your. You can't hear me? Sorry. Okay, how's that? Can you hear? There's got to be something here technical that I'm not doing. Is there a mic level there? Oh, here it is. Okay, I'll talk louder. Is that better? Okay. Okay. Sorry. Okay. All right. So, as I was saying, if you've never seen a launch of a space shuttle, there are very few left, and it's worth your while to go way out of your way to go see one. It is one of the more spectacular and mind-blowing experiences that you could possibly have. It's simply beautiful. The sound is intense. It, you know, hits your chest. The brilliance of the exhaust coming, particularly out of the solid rocket boosters, is just amazing. And if you actually have loved ones on board, you know, that makes it all the more special, as we did in this case, seven very brave friends who pulled this mission off spectacularly. Now, let's see if I can get out of this. By the way, if you can't hear me in the back, just speak up, because I'm fully capable of yelling. So what I want to do now is just walk quickly through some of the things that happened on this mission, which made it particularly interesting even for those of us who had done it four times before. Okay. All right, don't read the writing. It's okay. It's just a list of all the payload items we took and the things that we had to take up to Hubble, both to repair it, to assure that it would have a longer lifetime, hopefully at least 5 more years, and I think more like 10 more years, and also some new scientific instruments, which are, in fact, the most powerful, capable observing tools that we have ever put on this telescope. And the beauty of being able to service a telescope like this in space is that you can always keep its technology refreshed and up to date. So it becomes a new telescope every time the astronauts serviced it. So this is a new camera, a new spectrograph. We had two broken instruments, and for the very first time, a camera and a spectrograph, for the very first time, we asked astronauts to actually take off side panels, get inside those instruments, and replace circuit boards. And so that was an astonishing feat, and we tried two. I was hoping if we were lucky we would get one of them successfully done. Both of them were successful. So we have our new camera back. We have our spectrograph back. New camera. This was a new camera, actually, when it failed. It was less than 5 years old. We had a computer system that had failed last October about 2 weeks before the launch was originally scheduled. And so we stood down for, within 2 weeks of that launch and went into a process of recertifying a new computer system to take up to the spacecraft. And that was important to do. Everyone agreed that we didn't want to leave Hubble without this system fully redundant. And so the crew got within 2 weeks of flying and were told to stand down for several months. We put in new gyroscopes to help stabilize and point the spacecraft. We put in new batteries. They hadn't been changed out in 19 years. A new fine guidance sensor, which again helps point and stabilize the spacecraft so that it retains its very sharp vision on the sky and doesn't shake and blur. Some outer blanket layers, which were to improve the outer insulation on the spacecraft to keep it cooler inside. And finally, what we call a soft capture mechanism, which will help a future mission grab hold of Hubble more readily than we're able to with a robot normally. And the idea is that someday we'll have to grab hold of Hubble robotically probably and send it into the Pacific Ocean in a controlled reentry. So it will come in eventually, and we don't want it to hit anybody. Okay, so this is the crew that was ready to fly in October, and then we're told, oh, you're going to have to wait a while, so you can see how joyous they are on launch day. Scott Altman Scooter is the mission commander. Drew Feustel is an EVA astronaut. Ray J. Greg Johnson was the pilot on the mission. Megan MacArthur was the remote arm operator and the mission engineer. John Grunsfeld, the most experienced EVA astronaut on the mission. This was his third time to Hubble. And let's see, have I left out? Oh, Mike Massimino, the tall guy, the tall Italian back here, was also an EVA astronaut. Sorry, Mike. Where is Mike Good? Right there. Mike Good. He and Mike Massimino would go out together on EVAs. They're both named Mike. So what do you call Mike and Mike? Well, you have a code, and Mike Good translates to bueno. So good equals bueno. And so he's bueno. And Mike Massimino translates into mass, and I think it's an appropriate name. Okay, so at 2:01 in the afternoon, Eastern time, at KSC, off pad 39A, Space Shuttle Atlantis took off. When the window opened, we were ready to go. It took off at the first opportunity, which is always a lovely sight. This is, while they're in the process of rendezvousing with Hubble, I think someone from Europe, I think he's Danish, I'm not positive, took this image from KSC. So this is the sun, okay, in the background. That's the shuttle, and that's Hubble getting close together. So a rather spectacular shot. The pair of them pass along across the sun in just a few seconds, so it's not an easy shot to get. Okay, so now is rendezvous day. Megan MacArthur, controlling the remote arm here, grapples Hubble, actually. It's It's not simple, but it's helped a lot by the fact that although, as we say, these spacecraft are going around the Earth at 17,500 miles per hour, their relative velocity relative to each other is nulled out to essentially zero by Scott Altman, the commander. So all Megan has to do, all, in quotes, is reach out with remote arm and grab hold of a grappling fixture, and then she pulls the spacecraft, the Hubble spacecraft, down to a flight support system that you can't see here. It's in the back of the spacecraft, but it's a flat circle. It's like a lazy Susan, and it can rotate and it can tip and tilt so that you can get this Hubble into any orientation that you need for the astronauts to get access to their work sites and do their work. This was on Grapple Rendezvous and Grapple Day, and this is a JSC, and that happens to be me, but across the aisle over here is Jennifer sitting at her console, and we're all exceedingly excited to see Hubble again for the first time in, well, since 2002. Okay, so now Hubble is attached to the flight support structure down here. Remote arm has been pulled away, and it's in a position where the astronauts can go to work on it. And so on the first spacewalk, there were five spacewalks on five consecutive days. Each one was scheduled to last 6.5 hours. Only one of them did actually last a little over 6 hours. The others set, let's see, three of the five set records for EVAs on Hubble. And so the tasks were arduous, but they did get them done. So this is John Grunsfeld out in the shuttle bay, and you can see the reflection of Drew Feustel, his EVA partner, taking this wonderful image. And the reason I show this, besides the fact that it's spectacular, is you see here headlights, a pair of lights there that he can use to get light onto his work surface so he can see what he's doing inside the spacecraft, and then two head cams or helmet cams. So those are little CCD cameras that take images so that if you're on the ground and you have a communications link to the shuttle, you can actually see the work as the astronaut is doing it just as he sees it. And this is an example of a helmet cam shot. Okay, this is the first interesting moment of the mission. The first task on the first spacewalk was the most important scientific task of the mission. We had to take out an old camera that had been in Hubble since 1993 and replace it with a brand spanking new, very high-tech, beautiful, wonderful, wonderfully working camera on the ground as we tested it. And so we had to get the old camera out to put the new camera in. The old camera is held in by a single bolt. And it's called the A-latch bolt, which tightens down a latch that holds the camera in. And so it's a matter of taking a power tool here with it's like a torque wrench, and attaching it to the head of that bolt and applying sufficient torque to get the bolt to unscrew. And so they the astronauts set this torque wrench at the proper torque setting, and it was 37 foot-pounds, and it slipped like a, you know, it just wouldn't turn properly. Too much torque was required, and you would have to over-torque it beyond 37, and it slipped. Okay, that was the first try. That was nice. So he raised it up to something in the 40s foot-pounds, and it slipped again. It did not unfasten the bolt. At this point, your friendly senior project scientist was nearing panic, and I undid my headset and ran upstairs to the floor above where we were sitting so I could be with the engineering team that was monitoring this in great detail and get a little better situational awareness that way. And when I got up there, they were talking about, well, if the bolt breaks, that's the way it is. There's nothing more we can do about it. If the bolt breaks, the old camera stays in Hubble forever, and we bring this $140 million new camera back to Earth unused. And so I said, before it breaks, can we talk about it? And most of the engineers said, no, I mean, we can't think of anything else you do. And I tried to get inventive, and I couldn't really think of anything anyway either. Okay. Good ending to a potentially disastrous story. The person holding this wrench is an astronaut named Drew Feustel. This is his first flight into space. He's a Purdue University graduate, I'm happy to say, which makes him doubly qualified. And Drew, by his hobby, is auto mechanics. At any given time, he has about five cars in his three-car garage that he's working on, and he'll fix a car up, drive it for a couple of years, and then sell it and buy a new car and work on that and fix it up. I think his wife drives a little yellow convertible that he prepared for her especially. So in any event, as an auto mechanic, he has really good sense of what it's like not to be able to get a bolt undone, you know, like a lug nut on a tire or something. So he went to manual mode. He got rid of the torque, all the fancy automatic electrically controlled torquing tools, and he just went purely into manual mode. He got the socket over the bolt properly. He pushed it in just enough to release a spring that was gripping the bolt inside the instrument behind that panel that you see. And then he applied normal human muscle power, but he did it very carefully. He didn't jerk. And, you know, we were all just praying is what we were doing. We were praying. Some of us, at least, were praying. And then suddenly, I know you couldn't hear it, but it felt like you could hear the little pop. And he said, oh, it came loose. And now it's turning normally. Now, I'm kind of embarrassed to show this, but I think it's important to give you an idea of what is really going through our minds at this time. I wasn't aware that they were taking pictures. And my wife said, why weren't you happy? You know, why aren't you smiling? And I said, well, you know, if you had come within about 6 inches of being hit by a Mack truck, what would be the expression on your face about 2 seconds later? So it's some combination of residual terror, relief, anger, you know, at fate for doing that to us on such an occasion and so forth. So, in any event, I assure you that a few minutes later, I was all smiles. Okay, so there's the opening where the old camera came out. We're ready to put in the new camera. This is the old camera being carried away so that it can be put in a storage box to be brought back to the surface of the Earth. And by the way, it will be on display in the Air and Space Museum in Washington this November. And here they are putting it down. I'm showing you this in particular because the new camera looks very much like this. So it's a pretty good sort of a baby grand piano-sized instrument. It weighs about 900 pounds. And so the new camera that went in looks pretty much like the old one that was taken out, except it's a much, much better camera. Then there was that bulky computer that failed last October, so a lot of work went into preparing to put the spare computer in, and so this is John Grunsfeld up actually doing that job, and it was one of the things we thought was going to be difficult that actually turned out to be fairly straightforward. Okay, the next day, Mass and Bueno had to go out and replace Hubble's gyroscopes. They put in 6 new gyroscopes. Each of these boxes called remote sensor units have 2 gyroscopes in them, so they have to replace 3 of these. And there was some balkiness, and actually one of the packages like this didn't fit in like it was supposed to. And thankfully, we take a flight spare on all our missions, flight spare remote sensing unit, and so we put in the spare instead. So the outcome of that was 6 wonderful new gyroscopes to keep Hubble pointed properly. This is Bueno on the end of the remote arm, which is pretty amazing. So Megan MacArthur inside the cabin of the shuttle is actually moving 1 inch here, 2 inches there, 6 inches there, to move him precisely where he wants to be to get at the work site. And I think you can see there, that leg belongs to Mike Massimino. He's forward, and he's Bueno, and he's moving toward the aft shroud of the Hubble, which is open there. And there's Mike Massimino actually inside Hubble Space Telescope, inside the aft shroud, putting in some new gyros. This is a fixed-head star tracker, by the way, for those of you who might wonder. Okay, and then the third spacewalk involved, first of all, taking out the box called COSTAR, Corrective Optics Space Telescope Axial Replacement. We have acronyms for everything in NASA, and sometimes we try to make them clever. So COSTAR was a box which was put in 1993 as one of the 2 devices that corrected Hubble's blurry vision. You may remember that when Hubble was first launched in 1990, it effectively was nearsighted. We couldn't bring any image to a proper focus. So some very clever scientists and engineers figured out how to optically correct that problem, and the COSTAR basically contained a suite of small mirrors about the size of a quarter, which could be inserted into the beam of the telescope and corrected, so that by the time the light got to the sensors that measured the brightness of the light, took pictures and so forth, those instruments were completely unaware that there had been any spherical aberration, because this device, along with the Whitefield Planetary Camera 2, that old camera I was telling you about, fully corrected it. This also will go in the Air and Space Museum and has been brought back to Earth, obviously. So now they're in the process of putting in the place of that COSTAR device, our brand-new high-tech spectrograph, the Cosmic Origin Spectrograph. If you don't know what a spectrograph is, I don't have time to tell you, but think of, the sunlight light from the sun passing through a rain cloud creating a rainbow. So sunlight, which normally looks yellow to you, gets sprouted out into red, orange, yellow, green, blue, violet, the colors of the rainbow. That's what a spectrograph does. It takes combined light and spreads it out into its component colors and gives you all kinds of wonderful astrophysical data that allows you to understand stars and nebulae and galaxies and so forth. So it's not a glamorous instrument, but it produces wonderful quantitative physics data for astrophysicists to use. So here you can't see it because it's on the other side of the astronauts here. And so here's where the helmet cam comes in into play again. And I'm not sure, this is rather dim, but this is the box. It's about the size of a refrigerator. It weighs maybe 800 pounds. Here are the handles. This is Drew Feustel pushing the box in. So that's the new spectrograph going in. And the science team for that instrument was thrilled at that moment. And this is the same activity. I just put it up because it's an absolutely glorious picture. If you want to think about how beautiful our universe is, start with our own Earth and how beautiful our Earth is and how precious. Okay, then the next task was supposed to be the most difficult one on the whole mission. And this was the first task where an astronaut, John Grunsfeld in this case, took off the side panel of an instrument. He had to cut a grid, metal grid, take it off, and unfasten 36 screws and so forth, and to get into the electronics box. And here he successfully got inside, and this is one of the circuit boards, one of four, that he had to take out and replace. Three of them came out easily. The fourth one was difficult. He had to bend it to get it around a strut, but it worked fine. He got them all out. And the old instrument that had failed electronically is now working beautifully. Thank you very much. Just a little scene from two people conferring with each other in the blue flight control room, which is where we sat. Okay, next day, EVA 4, Spacewalk 4, also involved the repair of an instrument, the Space Telescope Imaging Spectrograph. And in this case, the side panel of the instrument that had to be taken off to allow you to get to the innards, the electronics, the circuit boards inside the instrument, it involved taking away or unfastening 111 screws. And these screws are not captivated. So that is to say, once you unscrew it, it can just float away. And you don't want these screws hitting the shuttle, hitting Hubble, getting up inside Hubble, and messing up the works in some way. So the engineers at Goddard invented a really clever device called a fastener capture plate, and you see it here. And what it is just a plastic surface with a supporting grid on it that has 111 holes in it. And this is literally, it's not glued, but an adhesive of some sort is used to fasten it down to the panel that has to be released from the instrument. And each of these holes is big enough to allow a drill bit to go in, a screwdriver bit, to unscrew each bolt or each screw, but the holes are small enough that the screws can't come back out. So basically you have a sandwich when you're finished removing all these screws of the side panel of the instrument, the fastener capture plate, and inside all of these little black screws floating around. And when we saw those on the video monitor as the crew was carrying that around, it looked like 111 angry bees floating around inside. Really reminded us of that. Okay, this was not a good day. This, except for what happened on the first spacewalk that I showed you earlier, this was the close second to the worst day we had. The problem is to get that fastener capture plate on, there was in place a handle, just like your refrigerator door handle, right here. And that had to be unfastened and removed to make room for the fastener capture plate. Okay, so Mike Massimino was doing this. He had, again, his power screwdriver. He successfully unscrewed three screws, but on the fourth screw, he did exactly like you and I do in the shop. He came in at an angle. It was a Phillips head, I think. He came in at an angle, and he accidentally started the screwdriver up before he hit the screw head, and it just reamed it out. Okay, so we tried many more times with different size bits and so forth. Nothing would make that screw come loose. And by that time, we were falling behind. We had supposedly 6.5 hours to do this job, and we were falling, I think we were 1.5 hours behind right at that point, struggling with how you get that handle off. And all kinds of ingenious ideas were put on the table. But then somebody said, why don't you just break it off? And horrors, you know, you don't break things in space, that on purpose at least. And so real quickly, the engineers back at Goddard, and of course we were at JSC monitoring this, the engineers back at Goddard went off into the laboratory and simulated what it would take to break that off. And they established it would take 60 pounds of force at the loose end of the handle to break it free. And they filmed, they had a video, which we never got to see, thank goodness, of the experiment. So they attached a strain gauge and a pulling device to the top of this handle and pulled and measured the force it would take to break it, 60 pounds. When it broke in this video, the thing came loose, went flying across the room, hit a wall, came flying back into the field of view. And so we've got in mind here, you know, people who have seen this are thinking, you know, if Mass does this, is it going to hit him in the helmet and break his helmet? Is it going to puncture his suit and so forth and so on? So luckily, Tony Sakachi, our lead flight director, was not, you know, we didn't show him that video or this would not have been allowed. But in any event, there was due diligence, due deliberation. The crew talked among themselves about whether they wanted to try this. And somewhere along the line of the conversation, the term stored energy had been used, I think, to reflect the energy that's released when you would break this. And so everybody said, yes, yes, let's go ahead. Mass, are you good? Sure, go ahead. And then there was a silence for a few seconds, and then Massimino got on the line and says, can we talk a little more about this stored energy thing? You know. So, yeah, but finally he satisfied himself, and there's a wonderful film which we just saw last week for the first time, and I don't own a copy of it as yet, but I'm going to get one that actually shows him breaking this off. And he pulls back and forth a couple of times and then go, boom, and it came right off, and his next words were, storage bag, please. And so it was as though it was totally routine and he hadn't risked his life at all. So in any event, after all that trauma, and this was put on, and he was ready to go to work, and he had this little mini power tool, this little screwdriver, and he started to use it, and the battery was dead. And his famous words were, oh, for Pete's sake. I suspect what was going through his mind might have been a little stronger than that. But at this point, you could tell he was getting frustrated. We were all on the ground getting frustrated. Some people suggested, why don't we stop this and go on to the next task? It's clear this isn't going to work. And there was a chorus of about 30 of us who stood up at once and said, no. And, you know, this is the most important thing he should be doing. So he went back to the airlock. We had a spare mini power tool with a good battery in it. And while he was in the airlock, he got a recharge of his electrical power in his battery, got a recharge of his oxygen in his spacesuit. And he spent a little time in there. And I think, I don't know if he was praying, possibly. He was contemplating getting his zen back. And when he came out, he was a tiger. He was ready to go and completely refreshed. Went in and took out those 111 screws in about 20 minutes, which is astonishing. It's sort of NASCAR pace to get a tire off. And then he did get inside the instrument. These are the circuit boards. He took out the top circuit board, replaced it with a new one, closed it back up, not with 111 screws this time. It was an entirely different clamping mechanism to put the side panel back on. And then we turned on the power. And this instrument that had been dead since 2004 just, oh, where have you guys been? You know, it just came right back up to life. It was like Rip Van Winkle waking up from a long sleep. And it has worked. It's had a couple of hiccups, but they're very minor. And we've worked around them. And it's up and working beautifully right now. So we're thrilled. Jennifer in particular is thrilled because she honchoed this in her days at NASA headquarters to get this instrument repaired. And then the next day, some batteries were replaced. So we had 6 new nickel hydrogen batteries put in. This is the last spacewalk. That fine guidance sensor, this is the old one that's been taken out. And Oh, that's just a – I have to put in the human element. So this is Preston Birch, who's the Hubble program manager and is the guy I work most closely with. This is Frank Cepolina, who's the inventor of servicing the process, the science and art of astronauts servicing robotic spacecraft, and you've seen this guy. So, and then back to this EVA, this is the new fine guidance sensor being put in. And again, this is the fifth and final spacewalk. And the final thing, and again, sort of miraculous, this is the insulation, the new insulation that was to be put on parts of the outer skin of the spacecraft to help keep the innards cooler. We didn't think this was going to get done with all the other things that had happened in the mission. But John Grunsfeld and Drew Feustel actually got themselves out of bed an hour early and got out an hour early and had extra time and got this done. So despite all of the travails of the mission, it was 110% successful. They got everything done and then that we expected and then some. And everything is working miraculously well, although I'm not supposed to use that word in this context. This is just a lovely shot out on the end of the remote arm. There are two crewmen. One stands on the end of the arm clamped in down here and is moved around by the arm operator. The other is what we call the free floater, and that person just tethers themselves and moves around the spacecraft freely. And inside this is some of the crew eating. This is Drew Feustel, and he's fixing his tacos, I think. And Mike Massimino, I don't know, he might have biscotti. And this is Megan MacArthur, note the hairdo. And I think I see a sandwich up there somewhere. So they had a little time after all the EVAs to have a little fun and enjoy the view from up there. And now Hubble is being deployed. The remote arm, again, is used to lift it off the flight support structure, that Lazy Susan I was telling you about. And here it has been released. And this is the soft capture mechanism that's been added to the bottom. So someday, 10, 15 years from now, maybe more than that, a robotic spacecraft or even the new architecture, the new human spacecraft. This is the standard docking mechanism that's part of the new launch vehicle architecture that's being developed. So it's compatible with either a human a grapple or a robotic grapple, either to deorbit or some people, one or two people in this world think maybe to be serviced again. And that's it floating away. So this is nominally the last time anyone will see Hubble close up. It's about 304 nautical miles right now. It was very nearly circular. It was launched at about 320 or 25, something of that order. So it's come down a bit. But it, as long as the solar, we can't envision a strong enough solar cycle to bring it in any earlier than the mid-2020s. So we have lots of time to take care of the disposal of it. And so this is deploy day, and deploy day, the happiest of days to a Hubble hugger, which I am. And so it was a very happy moment. This is just a spectacular image taken after deploy is over. It's a shame we couldn't get the lights down, but just remind you, this is the Earth. This is the atmosphere of the Earth, that thin thing. This is its sunrise, I believe. And, we talk about global warming or pollution issues or whatever. That's the only atmosphere we've got. That's all there is to it. It is just incredibly tenuous. And I find this image both gorgeous and scary. And, of course, we wanted to land at KSC. That's where they always prefer to land the shuttle. I had never seen a shuttle landing, so I went to KSC and got to visit with the astronauts' families while we were waiting for a landing. They waved off three straight days because of questionable weather. And so as Scooter Altman, the commander, says, we turned left instead of right, and they landed at Edwards Air Force Base, Dryden Space Center in California. And here's that crew again, having done a great job. And the question was asked of them last week, how did you guys smell after all this time? And the answer was that they took great care of their personal hygiene, and they thought they were just fine. Thank you very much. And that's the story, and it was a great thrill. And I hope you've enjoyed seeing a little bit of it.
Thank you. I'm going to plug your hope in just a second. Yeah. Just miss people for the reception.
I know you're going to want to visit with both Charlie and with Dave. These have been very, very interesting presentations. When you go out, you're going to wonder why the lights in the lobby are out, and we're kind of wondering that, too. I think they're on a timer or something, and so we have some little night lights, but so don't think that we're trying to save power around here. I think somebody didn't set them to leave them on. But the good news is I double-checked to see there.